Hello and welcome to the Planet Podcast, episode 20 for the first week of March 2010. I'm your host, Patrick Roanhouse, and today we have a special guest today for our interview session of the podcast, a friend of mine, Lokesh Dakar. He's a graphic designer and web developer out of Baltimore, Maryland, and he's created a very popular JavaScript application called Lightbox. You've probably seen it all over the web, but I'll let him tell you what it is. How are you doing today, Lokesh?
Doing great. Hi, everybody.
We're at our friend's Paul's place right now, drinking beers and prepping for South by Southwest. But before South by Southwest, I decided to sit down with you because you created this application, Lightbox. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it? What exactly does it do, and how has it changed the web so far?
Sure. So I'm sure you've run across it. How Lightbox works. Sorry about that. When you click an image, you've seen this before plenty of times, where an image is displayed on top of the web page. So rather than going to a separate page, the screen will dim and the image will zoom into the full size of the image. You'll see it on top of the actual website. And that's the core of what Lightbox is. What's kind of unique about it is when this was introduced a couple years ago, this concept of overlaying content on top of a website was very new. So it's a really common technique now, with use not only for images but video, login screens, other HTML content, and it's ubiquitous around the web now. But originally, it all started with me trying to display images full size on a website without having to go to a separate page in the browser.
Now, you basically see this gallery software being used by major web blogs now. Particularly, a lot of people have probably seen it on Weblogs Inc. with their different websites like Engadget and Tua and a bunch of other ones. What was the first idea, the inception of it? I mean, like, what were you doing? Like, the kind of, Doc Brown, did you fall off the toilet seat kind of thing? And then when you woke up, you drew this, flux capacitor kind of thing? Or, like, what was the spurning moment for you?
It was a very practical need at the time. So this is probably 3 years ago now. I was had a blog at huddledtogether.com. And I was getting tired of the layout. I had all these images in the blog. They were sized perfectly for the columns. They fit really nicely. Then I wanted to do a redesign. So I redesigned my blog, the width of the main column changed. Now the images didn't fit properly anymore. And I was looking for a way to use images where I wouldn't have to worry about the width of the column of my blog. It was independent of that. I would display on top of it. And that's the kind of the genesis of Lightbox. So that was the first when I started tinkering around with JavaScript at that point.
Now, the way that particularly this JavaScript application works is it requires a lot of manipulation of the DOM or to handle all that information. And also CSS. What particular framework were you using to do this? I mean, what exactly were the basis, the technical aspects of how you got to do it? And, again, what framework were you using?
So the first version, actually, which didn't support multiple images, it was just a very simple tool. You click a thumbnail or a link, and it would display the image on top. You'd close that and view the next image. That was actually done without the help of any libraries, and that was actually a way for me to learn JavaScript, I downloaded things from websites in the past, little JavaScript libraries, and hacked them and configured them, but never written anything from scratch. So it was a way to learn, how to write something on my own. And then eventually, for the second version, I ended up using the prototype library. So prototype and Scriptaculous were the two libraries that were used on that.
Okay. Now, in particular with the implementations of it, the first one was just basically the click thumbnail. With the later incarnations of it, you now have the features of having it auto-resize and having the ability of clicking the next in the selection of images. Where did it go from it was just your baby to the first major changes that were done by third-party people?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when the first version came out, you know, it picked up speed pretty quickly. So there was a lot of feedback. There's a lot of people requesting features. And, you know, there weren't too many modifications that were done by other people at that stage. But a lot of people were, you know, asking for certain things. And what I made sure to do in the second version was to really go out of my way to document the code and, you know, make sure if people did want to understand what was happening behind the scenes, they could look in the code. Even if they were new to JavaScript, they could go in there and take a peek and tinker around and hack at it themselves. And that really helped blossom this, like, for the second version, this community of people who were just porting it to different JavaScript libraries, adding, you know, other slideshow features or resizing or different transitions. And you know, it's really all about, you know, it was a good exercise for me to document the code properly and not be too clever and, you know, just make things really clear and make things configurable. And that lended itself to, you know, a lot of other developers, you know, taking a peek at the code and just building new tools off that.
Okay. Now, the one thing is, it's interesting because most people, when they think about writing code, they think about, like, you know, different licenses and stuff like that, proprietary versus open source. You decided to go with Creative Commons. I mean, understandable because JavaScript usually is something you can just look at the source for. Was there a particular reason you chose Creative Commons itself to, you know, attribute the code to for a license?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question because I chose Creative Commons because, you know, it's interesting because they actually, their process on their website to build out a custom license was really easy. And it's you know, a license that had, you know, a lot of press at that time. So I was kind of curious about it. And I, you know, I didn't know too much about licensing at that stage. So, it's funny because to this day, like every once in a while, I'll get somebody who wants me to dual license it under GPL or something of that sort. And I still, you know, Creative Commons was the easiest for me to comprehend, and that's why I chose that route. I'm not sure if that was the best route, but I mean, it served me pretty well. I mean, it seemed, I really like how they have a wizard on the website. I can walk through it and clearly define what I want this license to mean. And it's customizable to my needs. So it made sense to me. I know other people, like, there is some incompatibility with software using other licenses and things. So that stuff is just a little over my head, so I haven't really quite figured it out. But I've been pretty happy with my choice. So.
Okay. Now that you've basically, I mean, you've basically created, pardon the overused term, a paradigm shift for viewing media on the web. I mean, you see even Apple doing this on their trailers pages, where if you're not seeing an HD version of a trailer, it pops open a window using a very similar, you know, light box style overlay. How is it like knowing that, you know, you created this thing that now has basically completely changed how people interact with multimedia on the web?
No, I mean, it's awesome. I think, initially there was a lot of people using my script, but I mean, it is a couple years old now, and I've continued to update it and give it smaller revisions, but I've kept its core focus of displaying images, and it's really still a great tool for you know, people in portfolios and want to display their work. But there's what's more exciting is all the variant scripts that have come out, people who've like refined the execution a little bit. And there's some amazing scripts now that take Lightbox, that concept, and you know, open it up to different media, et cetera. And you know, I'm excited about that stuff as well. And you know, it's nice to see. And I've used those scripts as well, besides my own script. So
you're like, if it's better than mine, I will start incorporating it in, kind of thing.
Exactly. I mean, they've done a great job, and I've kept it. My Lightbox script is still great, super simple, great for displaying images. And but if you want like to display forms, et cetera, there's some awesome scripts out there. So
okay. Now, in particular with the ramifications of it, you're known for, I know you as a really, or not necessarily ornate, but very detailed in design. And I'm wondering, what's your view on the future of the web, particularly with HTML5 and CSS3 and things like Canvas that allow you to do things where you can have fonts be included in, but they're actually translated into, you know, PNG files. What's your view on this? I mean, I first met you actually from the local area JavaScript meetup, and you know, you gave some really great talks there, and I just would love to be able to hear more about what you think about, you know, the future of, you know, web design.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the open web stuff will like win out in the end. So I'm, you know, Pat, me and you talked a little bit earlier today about HTML5 and its, you know, video implementation, and you know, it's not quite up to snuff. It's not as good as Flash's support of video, but you know, it's really early, and you know, I think that will win out. So you'll see a lot more some of those CSS3 features and Canvas implemented. So, and there's some amazing people doing. You know, you can use Canvas now, and you know, it's not supported by some of the Internet Explorer browsers, but there's some amazing people building plugins and little JavaScript files you can include that'll, you know, use IE's native SVG support. It's a little technical, but I mean, there, you can start using some of this new open web technology now and have it work in IE, et cetera. So as far as like where things are going, UI-wise, generally, those concepts, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, I think we've kind of iterated slowly, you know, I mean, everything is, we're still iterating on things. I can't, it's hard for me to predict any, like, large-scale changes, you know, I would just be guessing, so.
Well, what are some of your favorite new tools and, you know, ways of thought when it comes to designing websites, particularly, you know, I mentioned again, you know, HTML5 and the Canvas and stuff like that. Like, what are some, like, really fun new techniques that you've gotten out of using these newer tools that have been coming out lately?
Okay, so, I mean, I say the sites and, you know, the general concepts that are kind of exciting these days to me are, you know, one thing the HTML5 does have is geolocation support. So I'm really curious to see where that goes. I think that alongside the other thing that's really exciting to me is gaming and bringing, you know, there's some amazing game designers, but there's like this disconnect between the web community and the game community right now. And, you know, I think that's going to start to dissolve. And I'm curious to see as more traditionally game design techniques come into the web, and also this geo stuff. So, I mean, I think it's not just going to be like Foursquare and Gowalla, but really like your traditional web apps are going to be using these gaming practices of points and progress bars and you know, awarding users, and there's some really cool stuff happening there.
So, like Foursquare kind of does with
badges. Yeah, Foursquare, but even not for just you know, a geolocation check-in app, but I mean, you can imagine it for you know, your enterprise app, you know, your Salesforce app giving out badges. So that stuff is really interesting. So
okay. As a designer, I'm limited in my design capabilities. I call myself at most a well-seasoned beginner. So what tools do you particularly use the most? for you when you're designing, whether it be web design, web development, or graphic design?
Sure. I mean, I use... I think the tools aren't as important as you think, so, but I mean, I tend to use... for most of my design work, it's Photoshop. It's, you know, I started with Photoshop 3 quite a long time ago. This is high school. And, you know, I'm just very comfortable with it. If you're starting out doing web design, I would say Fireworks is probably a better tool. It's a, it's more built. The tool, it's, the tool's built. It was started once the web was already popular, so it's built with that in mind when Photoshop was started to be like an alternative to the darkroom. So Photoshop works great, but there's a lot of features you don't need. So Fireworks is a great like design tool. I use Illustrator for vector stuff, so this is logos, things like that. I recently bought a Wacom tablet, and that's a really great way to like scribble notes. And you know, I do a lot of wireframing, which is you know, just these lo-fi, low fidelity mock-ups of like interfaces and interactions, and you don't need a lot of like straight lines there. You just want to quickly get something in. So traditionally, I would draw those out in pen and paper, and then photograph them or scan them and send them to a client. So it's nice to be able to draw them right in Photoshop and send them out. So those are my core tools. And for actual web development, I used TextMate for a lot of my projects, and also Eptana. They're both great tools. TextMate, like a slicker tool, very like minimal, fast. Eptana is built on Eclipse. It's a little bit heavy, but has, you know, it's kind of like the Firefox model. It tons of plugins. So if you want SVN, there's some code repository support, FTP built in, all that. It's all there. You can download it. So, so those are some of my core tools. If you have any specifics you want to ask me about, let me know.
Okay. So with all your background for design, what really got you into that beginning? Like what, like when you were little, you know, Lokesh, you know, 5-year-old little Lokesh, it's like, mommy, daddy, I want to be a designer. When did you realize that you wanted to actually do that?
Okay. So actually I remember, this is as far as back I can remember being into design was, and you'll like this, it was also, sophomore or junior in high school. I used to call into BBSs quite a bit. So these are the old, you know,
bulletin board systems.
Exactly. So you dial into, you know, you dial from your phone, you ask your parents not to like pick up the phone for a little bit. You dial in, to another phone, their friend or somebody, you know, don't know is hosting this BBS. And, you know, you play these text games and download files. But, at that point I picked up Photoshop a long time ago, and actually this is pretty early. This is the Prodigy days. I started a little website that had like a collection of cracks, if anybody knows what those are. I'm sure some people do. Those are essentially like,
it's like bracket K.
Yeah, how you like, you know, you download pirated software back in the day, and then you'd like crack it. It's essentially remove the copy protection. So this is like, this is what every like nerdy kid did
back when you were like, before you were 18, back when you were still a minor, you know, you don't do that anymore kind of thing.
I don't actually. Yeah, exactly. I'm going to be honest, but I will be. So I ended up creating a website for that, and I wanted to like spruce up the design. So I downloaded a bunch of, I downloaded Photoshop at that time. I downloaded 3D Studio. And, you know, there was actually this community online on the web there of, like, similar, like, really young kids dabbling with this stuff. And, you know, that was exciting, and I got into design that way. And what I was going to refer to before is actually senior of high school, I started a web design company with Chris Messina, which... Pat and I had talked about a little bit before. He's a big open source advocate, works at Google now. And so, he's a real business guy, and, took some of my, like, you know, I had no business sense at that point. I was just like dabbling in Photoshop and tinker around with like animated GIFs. And so we, you know, got a couple clients, did some web projects, and that kind of led me on the path to where I am now. I ended up doing more traditional graphic design after high school. So this is doing album covers and CD covers and logos. But then eventually kind of had an affinity for the tech stuff too and coding. So and I liked where both those two things met. So where I could do both design and code, and like, you know, where I am now, user interface design and development is fits that perfectly. So
for resources for other designers and developers, or just people learning for the first time, what are some good sites that you might suggest for people to go to?
Sure. So sites, that's actually a good question, because there's I do follow quite a few blogs. There's a couple of more obscure ones that I would actually recommend that people don't know about. Now, the first one is Luke Wabrowski, and maybe we'll put this in some show notes. Mm-hmm. So Luke Wabrowski, he was head of design at eBay. I might be getting his exact title wrong, but then he also, now he's currently head of like new product innovation, something like that, at Yahoo. He's written a couple of books on web forms. It doesn't sound exciting, but like there's a bunch of videos of him talking online as well. He's got a blog, and just really fascinating, really like answers a lot of those questions you'll run into, that, you know, things like every engineer, every designer runs into. It's like, wait, where should I put the labels on my form? Should I put them above the input, to the left? You know, he's a guy who's like going out there, and he has access to user studies and user research, and you know, he'll, you know, take advantage of these resources where these other companies and people are going out and doing this for you, and you can use that experience. So another blog I highly recommend is I'm trying to think. So this is the lead UI guy for Office 2007. His name is Jim Jensen. He had a blog running prior to the launch of Office 2007, and offered amazing insight on both design. And what was fascinating about his approach was he really, like, UI design is half art, half science. So, you know, he really would, you know, when you're working on a product like Microsoft Office, you have a ton of data. So it's interesting to see how he manages to parse this vast amount of data to pull like really like the key points that affect the design. You know, it's like, you know, he has, there's just a ton of data behind there. It's like, how often does, what's the most common command used in Microsoft Word? You know, and like, do they use the keyboard shortcut, or do they click the button? And all that stuff is there. So how they, you know, built the interface using this data is really, really fascinating. So those are two like a little bit obscure blogs, but really amazing reads. Highly recommend those two. I mean, and then you'll find out the other blogs, you know, like Smashing Magazine. There's a bunch of other design blogs that are pretty big, and you'll run across those. And I would say like follow those. What's even better is, you know, try to find a product or two you really like and follow those blogs. And those guys will get into like the really nitty gritty, like the real specifics of how they're designing their product. And that stuff is, I think, a little more valuable than some of the general design talk that goes around. So,
all right. So where can we find more of your work?
Sure. So, I mean, I have a blog, and it's in my full name. It's lokeshdekar.com. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just go through the archives a little bit on the blog, and portfolio is in the works, but I would say still go there, follow the blog, subscribe to the RSS feed, and also you can follow me on Twitter. It's at Locastacar, so as well. There's, you know, I should be a proper portfolio up shortly. Right now it's a little sparse, so, but yeah, that's probably the best location to find me on the web.
All right, thanks a lot, Lokesh, for being on the show today. I'm here still with Lokesh, my good friend, and also with Paul Capistani. You remember him from the last week's episode. Say hi, Paul.
Hello, Pat.
He says hi to the audience, too.
Yeah, hi, guys.
So, as I mentioned last week, Paul and I are going to South by Southwest, and our good friend Lokesh is going to be going with us as well. And so, basically, we're just going to talk about what we're looking forward to with South by Southwest. For me and Paul, this is our first time. But for Lokesh here, the great and wonderful designer that he is, creator of so many changing paradigm software things for the web, this is his, like, what?
Second.
So he's long in the tooth. He knows everything about this. He's like, ah, whatever, South by Southwest. So what do we have to look forward to about South by Southwest?
You know, it's just... it's really, there's some great workshops and panels and discussions, but it's really, just like every other conference, it's about meeting the people, you know, the hallway stuff. But even more than anything else, what's nice about South by Southwest and it being in Austin in March is, like, the weather's great. It's an amazing city if you haven't been there. There's a lot to explore. So it's just a great time being out there, like, hanging out with your peers outside of the convention, and just chit-chatting over a beer. And just, you know, can't beat that.
So, Paul, what in particular are you looking forward to for South by Southwest?
You know what I'm looking forward to. This Week in Startups, a podcast by Jason Calacanis.
Who's Jason Calacanis? I don't know who Jason Calacanis is.
Only the most awesome entrepreneur slash podcaster in the world. He will be live taping a show at South by Southwest. And, I mean, I'm definitely looking forward to that. I, like, bought him lemon drop shots at TechCrunch 50 in San Francisco a couple months ago. It was a blast over there. He's a cool guy, so looking forward to hopefully seeing him again. And besides that, like, I hear Dignation is going to be taping there.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. That's one of my personal things. I mean, you know, I was going to mention that myself. Besides, like, you know, those two shows, like, are there any particular panels you were interested in looking at?
So lots of the panels sound interesting. From some people I talked to, though, they said the panels weren't all that great, and that mostly, like Lokesh was mentioning, it's about, like, meeting people and, like, hanging out with your peers, etc., etc. So, I mean, I'll go to panels that sound super interesting, but we'll see. I mean, I'll play by ear.
I think one thing I'm also particularly looking forward to is I'm a cultural fan. You know, pop culture fan. I make jokes around you guys all the time that, for some reason or another, as you just don't get.
Yeah, it goes way over my head.
Such things as crossing the streams. He doesn't get that. Paul doesn't get crossing the streams.
I think I get it, but I don't like it.
Wow. See, he doesn't get it. He doesn't get it. But I'm really looking forward to the premiere of the film Kick-Ass. It's an adaptation of the Mark Miller comic book of the same name about, you know, people in everyday lives becoming costume vigilantes, but not with superpowers, and basically just beating each other senseless. That movie looks really fun, and there's just a lot of other stuff. Like, being this is my first South by Southwest, I remember seeing it on IFC when they were doing coverage of it, you know, Independent Film Channel. I mean, is it that cool, Lokesh? I mean, is it really as cool as IFC showed us?
You know, I didn't see the IFC coverage, but it's pretty awesome to, like, there's just a sense of, like, it's for, especially the tech community that we're a part of, like, there's a chance to meet all your peers, and, you know, everybody's just so down to earth. It's really easy to talk to somebody, and it's just a nice, you know, opportunity to, like, you know, there's, it's nice that, like, we're in a community where we can talk to these people who, you know, we really admire and look up to, and, you know, spend an hour chatting with them. You know, that's pretty rare. So, so Pat, what about you? Is there anybody in any peers that you would like to see? I'm gonna ask you one question that you haven't met before. That might be gone. Just assume.
Huh. That's a difficult one. I guess.
Any podcasters?
Yeah. Possibly running into Alex Albrecht or Kevin Rose from Dig Nation.
But you've met them.
I met them briefly, you know, here and there, just chatted. But, you know, maybe an extended chat would be fun. Mm-hmm. I guess, like, Felicia Day from the, oh, God, what's... her podcast show about the Guild, about, you know, people who play World of Warcraft and the, you know, drama of those lives, but, you know, fictionalized. I met her once at an LA show for the Dig Nation live show in LA, but it was just like, you know, hello, just a fan, bye. So it'd be interesting to talk to her and, you know, maybe interview her or something like that. Going to be talking to Dan Hugh from ICanHasCheeseburger.com. Set up an interview with that for the Monday of that week, and that'll be interesting because it'll be like, can I has cheeseburger? And he'll probably say no. But I like cheeseburgers.
Excellent.
Any people you're looking forward to, Paul? Like, you might be able to be, like, cling on to and jump and maybe grab a lock of hair for the sake of totem?
You already know. Jason Calacanis.
Your man crush on Jason Calacanis.
It's like, definitely.
I loves you, Jason. I loves you so much.
More than a man crush.
A man crush.
At this point, yeah.
It's a man stalking.
No, not that much. Crush, yes.
That just didn't sound right. It's like, crush, yes. You're like, what? But, yeah, so, I have a problem that you guys, or you guys have a problem that I don't. I'll eat anything. You guys are, Lokesh, you're a vegetarian. Paul, you're the 10th level vegan.
11th
level vegan.
And Lokesh is supposedly trying to get there, too.
I'm pretty close to being vegan, but, yeah, I mean, Paul, he's on the 11th level of Dante's Inferno.
It's like, this man will not even eat honey, because it comes from the bees.
Yes.
But, how will it work for you guys? I mean, like, Austin, like, I've not been...
Well, it's actually supposedly super vegan-friendly, pretty progressive city, and I've already looked into it, talked to some vegans down there, they gave us recommendations of what spots to check out. Like, I mean, there's a ton of options for us, so, I mean, I'm actually really looking forward to it. Should be some good food down there.
Mm-hmm. I've been past some amazing taco trucks. Like, there's nothing better than, like, a taco truck at, like, one or two in the morning.
Yeah.
I know. Well,
there's supposedly taco trucks, hot dog trucks.
I heard there's also a taco peddler who rides around on a bike with tacos. What's up with that?
That's here in Baltimore.
That's here in Baltimore?
Not in Austin.
Oh, I thought this taco peddler, you know, I heard a rumor that they, you know, went around the actual convention floor with them as well.
That would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
Because, you know, this taco peddler... I think we all know him, too.
His name might be Lokesh, the car.
Just so you guys know, last year when I went to South by Southwest, I was so, like, amazed by how perfect tacos are as, like, snack food, street food late at night, that I decided to bring a little bit of that back to Baltimore. So I've only done it once so far, but I will... fill up a messenger bag full of tacos that I make over a few hours and just deliver them to my friends wherever they are, if they're out on the town or at the house. As a friendly gesture once in a while.
Mm. So how do people get hooked up with these tacos?
Well, they can, it's Baltimore only so far, but it's I do have a Twitter account, a Taco Peddler, PEDALER. But who knows? We'll see you in Austin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think I'm looking. The one thing I love about these kind of shows in particular also is that with the interactive, it's that fervor for startups, which is really cool because you get to see all these like, will they make it? Will they succeed? Probably not.
Yeah.
Startups are a dime a dozen, so you got to jump onto the next thing and start something new if it begins to get a little smelly and old and rancid. But like one of the other things they're going to have is they're going to have this event called the Screen Burn, and it's going to be all these classic arcade games all set up. They're old, arcade cabinets all set up in this one area for the Interactive Festival, which will be really fun because I'm looking to play me some Arkanoid.
Nice. So bring a bunch of quarters, basically.
I heard supposedly it's free.
That would be awesome. Mm-hmm. Though I'm sure there will be crazy lines, probably.
Never know.
Yeah.
Street Fighter 2? Anyone?
Super Street Fighter 2, man.
Yeah, not bad.
Man.
Excellent.
Let's see. Are there anything else that we might want to bring up about with South by Southwest? I mean,
we're going down there to hopefully interview a couple of the startups, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And maybe whoever else we may run into. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if there's anyone listening who will be at South by Southwest, feel free to message the podcast at on Twitter at @theplan8podcast. If we get enough people who are interested in meeting up, we'll try to set something up where we'll meet together at one of the local events that might be happening there. If you're a startup that's going to be there, or just an organization that has something interesting, feel free to also message us at podcast@plan8ts.com. That way we can set something up with you to maybe have you as a guest on the podcast. We're going to be doing a new session particularly for South by Southwest, where we're doing the Plan 8 5-minute elevator pitch. And so we'll give you exactly 5 minutes to tell about your company or your product or whatever you're trying to show off while at South by Southwest. And we'll post those to the HD YouTube feed for the Plan 8 podcast. It'll be interesting because we're going to have Paul do a couple of them too, and he doesn't like being on camera.
We'll see.
So, again, I'm Patrick Ronhaus, host of the Plan 8 podcast. You can see me Twittering at Plan8TS on Twitter. You can see my podcast, obviously. This is Lokesh.
Hi guys, so you can just follow, just go to my website at lokeshdhakar.com, so it's LOKESHDHAKAR.com, and that's probably the best way you can find the rest of my contact info on there.
Yeah, and I'm Paul Capistani, my Twitter account is Paul, CAPESTANY, and yeah, feel free to follow me.
This has been the Plan 8 Podcast, episode 20 for the first week of March 2010. Thanks for listening.